This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on the Indo Daily.
People just trampled over me. Like, nobody stopped to see this baby is on our own. I was found walking. A fireman found me.
It was a massive shock, I think, to people in and out of the golfing world. They appear to everyone as the golden couple.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website.
Well, hurling was centre stage last week, but football was front and centre over the weekend. The championship really got up and running with two Division 1 clashes. Galway got one over on their Connacht rivals Mayo and Castlebar yesterday, whereas Armagh really flattered to deceive in their defeat against Donegal, and Donegal will really be fancying their chances in Ulster now as they play Cavan next up in the semi-final. Welcome to the Tyrone Podcast. Will Slattery here with Michael Verney. We'll be joined by Martin Brettany in just a minute to discuss all the football action. And in the second half of the show, John Milan will join us as well to go over all the hurling, including Limerick's game against Waterford. But first, Michael, you know, it was all hurling last week with a couple of big games, but it was good for football now to have a few kind of heavyweight clashes as well.
Yeah, and a few marquee kind of games over the weekend as well. Yeah, definitely. I know we'll get into it a bit later. I suppose the consequences of teams losing those big games and the big layoffs is not exactly ideal. But like Galway Mayo was a brilliant advertisement for championship football, you'd have to say, and had, you know, little mini comebacks throughout the game and a kind of a comeback at the end of the game as well. But Galway held firm, and just to see the outpouring of emotion. And I know it's been a very, very tough week in Galway with the passing away of Kate Moore, the Galway Camogie player there earlier on the week. And I know grandmother of a couple of the players involved passed away on Saturday night as well. So there was a lot of emotion, and Galway managed to harness that emotion. And I know Pádraig Joyce said after, you know, they really wanted to concentrate on, you know, trying to lift the people of Galway with their performance. And they certainly did that. A massive performance, one they can be hugely proud of, and one they'll be hoping to try and kick on from now over the next couple of weeks and months.
Yeah, and we're delighted to have Martin Brennan here with us to discuss that game and more. But Martin, we will start with that match in Castlebar. Like, how important a victory was that for Galway, for Pádraig Joyce, who's had a difficult couple of years, for the squad as well, and for the management team?
It was massive. I mean, Pádraig has been there for 2 years, and they were both very disruptive years, as they were for everybody else, it has to be said. But Galway lost the Connacht final to Mayo in 20 and 21, and of course, with no second chance, he didn't, or his team didn't get a chance to have a go. As I say, it was the same for everybody. But it was more difficult for new managers, and he just took over at the start of 20. Now, knowing Pádraig Joyce, and well, knowing everybody from Galway, it seems like from Galway myself, beating Mayo is always a massive, massive occasion for Galway, and particularly in over the last decade or so, with the exception there were a few years Galway won, but they didn't build on it then. I mean, they had the awful All Ireland semi final in 2018. So although they beat Mayo and was it in 16, 17, 18, there was no real progress made afterwards, and that was disappointing. I think and it's now a question of, can they build on this? I mean, they did it. They beat Mayo. And it didn't. Mayo come back and reached All Ireland finals, but it was important. It was a problem the manner in which they did it as well in the second half, having opened up a big half time lead or a big early lead to be pegged back. You would have thought, given Mayo's that Mayo would have pressed on. They didn't. So it was huge for Galway, and I think it will stand to them, because their confidence was shaken, badly shaken, I think, after the Connacht final last year in Croke Park, where quite frankly they were bullied in the second half and allowed themselves to be bullied, and that was odd, I have to say, because that wouldn't have been the history of Galway against Mayo, but that didn't happen yesterday. They really stood up, and you see, like Pádraig Conroy. I mean, Pádraig Conroy was a minor in 2007, and he's playing the best football of his career now. Unbelievable stuff. So it was a great win for Galway, and but the question will be, is it the start of something, or just another win over Mayo? Because that has happened in the past. Beat Mayo and haven't built on it. They have to do it this time, because that, you know, even winning a Connacht isn't good enough for Galway anymore, or nor should it be, that they should be thinking much further ahead than that.
Yeah, Michael, like what from a Galway perspective do they need to do, you know, to, as Martin say, you know, capitalise on this, as he mentioned, the three victories in 16, 17 and 18. Ultimately, you know, I think they lost to Kerry in one quarter final, they lost to Tipperary in another quarter final, and then they did make the semis in 18, but were you know, pretty comprehensively beaten by Dublin. What would you think they need to do to maybe take that next step?
Just one quick thing on Pádraig Joyce, Will. I think he probably came in, and maybe a lot of managers do, with kind of fanciful notions of the type of football you want to play. And then you realise inter-county football is a bit of a different beast, and you end up having to find this balance between attack and defence. And they were probably exposed a couple of times by Roscommon in the league final, when they did have bodies back, but maybe they were passive bodies at different stages. Yesterday, everybody seemed to be getting a hand in. There was bodies everywhere. They didn't allow Mayo those goal chances, maybe, that they did allow even to Roscommon in that league final. Everybody was playing an active role. Everybody was getting back, putting pressure on. So I definitely think they found a nice little blend, maybe between attack and defence yesterday. As regards what they didn't need to do to kick on, I think it's interesting. You know, remember when Cork beat Kerry in 2020 in that winter championship, kind of Cork were expected to go on and win Munster. Keane O'Neill was actually involved with that Cork team as well. He's involved with Galway as well. Like, this result against Mayo will be quickly forgotten unless they can go on and win a Connacht title. Now I think they have Sligo the next day, which would be a nice, you know, just to get feet back on the ground, get another game. I'm sure I'd be very, very confident of them winning that game. And then they have a score to settle with Roscommon. I think a big part of it with Galway, as I said, there is finding that happy balance. They have like some outstanding forwards. And Martin mentioned even Paul Conroy's role yesterday. He was outstanding with 3 points. Shane Walsh, you know, a brilliant footballer, but was able to deliver, you know, in a tough environment yesterday. Damien Comer looks like... The typical image of Damien Comer is get the ball, head down. Whereas yesterday, it was nearly his peripheral vision that nearly won the game for them a couple of times. It was that lovely little reverse pass for Johnny Heaney's goal. So I do think they've developed more as a team, but it's all about kicking on now. It's all about capitalising on that bit of momentum that they have. And I'm sure there was a lot of emotion around yesterday's victory, and a lot of relief, I'd say, from Pádraig Joyce's end. But they just need to get feet back on the ground now, and like, that result will be quickly forgotten unless they get their hands on the Nestor Cup in a couple of weeks' time. So I'm sure they'll be able to get their feet on the ground, and they'll really, really try and kick on from here.
Michael, you just incentivised Leitrim to great heights there by ignoring them. I think actually the draw, I think Sligo play Roscommon in the semi-final and Galway play Leitrim. I think that's the way it is, but you wouldn't want to forget Leitrim on this.
No.
Giving them a good incentive there. Andy Moran will be will have incentivizes for the Galway Leitrim game. But you're right. I mean, in all probability, it will be a Galway Roscommon final, and Roscommon have quite a good record against Galway in that. So you're dead right. They've got to build on this, or else yesterday counts for nothing. And they've got to not just win Connacht, but okay, maybe not win All Ireland, but they've got to do better. They haven't been All Ireland since one All Ireland semi final. Since they won the All-Ireland in 2001. They've only reached the All-Ireland semi-final once, where they put up a very poor effort against Dublin. So they've got to get into the last four and have a right go and see where that takes them.
And Martin, from a Mayo perspective, you know, they are in a familiar place. We mentioned 16, 17 and 18, you know, two of those years, they battled back through the back door and got to an All-Ireland final. And, you know, it's funny just looking at how it develops this year. It's 6 weeks until the qualifiers start. Like, Mayo have a number of injuries. That could be, you know, ample time for those guys to get fit again. Even someone like Killian O'Connor, who was only just back, another 6 weeks of, you know, getting more used to playing again. And you only have to win two qualifiers to get back into the quarterfinals, you know, unless there's a preliminary round and it could be drawn into it. But, you know, at the moment, it would just be two. So it's a very different landscape this year, and it might maybe suit Mayo potentially.
It might. And they've been so good at doing it. But don't start me, Will, on the season. I mean, it's 6 weeks they have to wait now for qualifiers. We're playing games, huge games in the middle of April, and then 6 week gaps, and then squeezing and closing and contracting everything into completed by July. Listen, that's the way it is, but it's absolute madness. However, in Mayo's case, it will help them there. They'll go, and it'll almost be like the start of a new season for them to some degree. And they've done that very well before. Tyrone were always expert at doing that over the years as well. They won All Ireland's their 0-5-0-8 Islanders came via the back door. And some teams are very good at that, and Mayo certainly are. So you're dead right. I mean, yeah, there's every chance they'll be back into the All-Ireland quarterfinals again. And after that, that's their time of year. They haven't won the All-Ireland, admittedly, but my God, they have been very good at that time of year. So it's far from over for them. And I think with all the injuries they have, they certainly will get a good chance to get fellas back on track. But still, having to wait 6 weeks.
Yeah, there's no better team to regroup. And as Martin says, they do have ample time. They'd surely have Paddy Durkin back, Rob Henley back, Jordan Flynn back. I thought it was a bit harsh maybe to highlight, you know, Killian O'Connor's free taking even on the Sunday game last night. His free taking since he got in with Mayo, barring, you know, maybe that one that drifted wide against Dublin in the All-Ireland final, his free taking has been nearly impeccable. And I know there were tight margins yesterday, but just to pick out one game in isolation maybe and not point back to you know, all his near flawless performances in the years before that, I thought was a bit harsh. But Michael,
yesterday's game was well accounted, and Ryan O'Donoghue had been very good. So, you know, so it's a moot point who should be on the frees. I mean, the guy who was kicking them or the guy who's returned with a great record from the past. I mean, it was all about yesterday. And Ryan O'Donoghue has been very good all year.
He has, yeah. I, as regards experience and nailing frees when they had to be nailed for the guts of the last decade, I'd be having Killian O'Connor most days of the week there. But there's plenty for Mayo to work on here. Probably one thing that was probably mentioned, and it was mentioned as a positive throughout the league, was the amount of players that they tried. And that can be a good thing, but there was definitely an element of not exactly knowing what their best 15 was, not maybe going into the game yesterday and even throughout the game and bringing in different guys. And there was a bit of an imbalance maybe in their team as well. And even just Aidan Orm's shot at the end was a very low percentage shot to take on. And perhaps they maybe should have worked it into a better position, but they nearly got themselves into a position for, you know, another amazing comeback. But on the balance play, you'd have to say Galway were a score or two of the better team yesterday, without a doubt.
Yeah, and if it had gone to extra time, it would have been interesting, because Mayo were really coming on hard at the end. As you say, I think they kicked 5 points in a row. Martin, just on the schedule you mentioned there, obviously 6 weeks, I think for Mayo, is it to the qualifiers? And then the provincial champions, it's a four-week gap until the quarterfinals. That's a kind of a funny scheduling kind of issue, considering how condensed everything is, that there's still going to be long periods within that where, you know, some key teams or some major teams will be waiting, you know, a long, long time, probably longer than they would have in the old system almost.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this new scheduling is, in my view, utter madness, and it's chaos from the start. I mean, the idea of starting the championship so early and finishing it in July, and we still have 6 week gaps between the teams playing. I don't know what it's about. And I think, is it because, you know, decisions were made in the course of the pandemic era, and everybody was sort of saying there's more important things in life, and let's agree with anything that's put before us. But it just doesn't make sense. And I would put a bet with anybody that this schedule will not last, and that we'll be back playing All-Ireland finals much later than the middle of July. Maybe not next year, because they'll have to give it another year. But I bet you that we'll be back to playing All-Ireland finals later. It's throwing away valuable time. Nicky English made a point, for instance, in commenting the other evening on the Limerick Waterford game, I think it was, what he said, that it was a spring pitch, slightly different to a summer pitch. Now, the grounds are very dry at the moment, there's no doubt about it, but they're not summer dry and not summer slick, so to speak. And yet we're playing all these big games now. I just don't understand it, and it would be fine if it was a very streamlined program. But now we have a situation where teams are sitting around for 6 weeks. It's not good, and I think it will be reviewed, I've no doubt, in a year or two's time, because there's a complete lack of logic to it, in my view.
Well, I have to say I am a big fan of the split season and giving club players a lot more time and a definite season for them to work within. But I do agree with Martin. I do think it will be tweaked, even if it's ever so slightly. I'm looking at the hurling championship even, and I'm thinking there's so much going on within, like so much going on so quickly. And then even you're looking at the teams that are going to be gone out of the hurling championship, and then all of a sudden you're going to have two teams coming in from the Joe McDonagh Cup into preliminary quarterfinals. I don't know if that still makes sense. I know you still need an incentive maybe for the McDonagh Cup, but you're going to have maybe potentially, we'll say, Tip and Cork, and maybe Wexford, Westmeath and Laois gone out of Leinster, and then you're going to have two more teams coming into the championship, and they're not going to be really competitive fixtures at a competitive time. I'd be looking at probably pushing things back a week or at least 2 weeks and just letting the round robin championships breed a small bit more and let a small bit of exposure go to a few more games. I don't agree with that we're giving away our summer to soccer, rugby. I don't agree with that personally, because there's so many club games going on all around the country. I just think maybe the first week in August onwards would be fine. I just think we do need to let the round robin campaigns breed a small bit more. But people that are on the ground in clubs all around the country, and I'm a club player myself, the fact that we know that we have August and September, at least they're going to be fantastic months to play a club hurling or football within. I think that's brilliant for what is 98% of the players that play GAA in this country.
Well, Michael, most counties have that anyway, because they're out of the championship. What do Mayo do now, for instance? They have 6 weeks, and I say Armagh, anybody knocked out, they have 6 weeks to wait for the next round. Do those players go back to their clubs, or do they just stay with the county team, just training for 6 weeks?
Yeah, well, I don't see them even let back with their clubs, Martin, to be honest with you. That's probably the case. And that is a real anomaly within a system, that if you're playing a condensed championship and a team can lose and be out for 6 weeks, like, that is basically the old break between league and championship. That's the old, it's like you're starting your pre-season again for the championship season coming. So imbalances like that will definitely have to be ironed out. A lot of the time, we only see the problems when it actually happens in front of us. When we see it on paper, we don't see the problems that lay ahead. Even the Munster round robin, you're saying 2 weeks on, a week off, 2 weeks on. Oh, that's fine. But on paper, that might look fine. In theory, it doesn't really work. And even we want to, you know, the second tier hurling championship, the McDonagh Cup, that just gets totally papered over at the moment with the amount of McCarthy Cup games that are going over. So I do think we probably need to balance things out and spread things out a bit more if we want to get the best out of it.
But for the profile of the game, you said there about you have no, you know, it's not, you don't see it as a big issue handing it over to other sports. It's not.
I don't see it as handing over, Martin. I don't see that as handing over.
No, but Michael, the club scene is fantastic. It's fantastic for the players and for the local. But you take the high profile games, the star game, the games that sell, that market the hurling and football, and that draw young players in and the whole lot. It's the inter-county game. We cannot just say, treat it as if it's some sort of an encumbrance on the whole scene. It's not. It's the front of house thing. Everything else, it can get a total priority, of course, but there can be an integrated system worked out better than just closing down the inter-county scene in July. And you watch, Michael, and you will probably, you will see when county finals are played this year. Or any other year, there will still be quite a lot of lads head off to America for the summer. You know, you as a club player for so many years, you know how it works yourself. And we'll see when county finals are being played. They'll still be played. Some of them will be played quite late again. I just think there was a better way. I just think it was taken as COVID forced split season and just, oh my God, that's a great idea, let's go with it. I don't think it was thought through, analysed really in detail. And I think it's coming home to roost to some degree now. As I say, we have 6 week gaps in players, and as you said, they won't go. Will Mayo go back to club? They won't, presumably. So what? Train for 6 weeks for a county, for maybe one more county game.
The last thing I'll say on it is, like the 27,000 people that were in the Gaelic grounds the other night, the 40,000 that were in Páirc Uí for Cork and Limerick. The timing of these games doesn't, I don't think it has diminished their profile in any means, and I think the publicity around it, people are still talking about it, people are still going. Like if you fix the games, people will come.
But probably I was squeezing them all in, squeezing, and
a tad too much. I will agree with you on that. A tad too much. I do think there's a happy
balance. Bit too much, yeah. I would suggest.
A tad too much, I would say. But I definitely think it's the sort of thing, we've probably gone from one extreme to the other, and what's usually the case is finding a happy balance in the middle. And as Martin says there, I do imagine that will be found.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens this August when there's no GA, there won't be any rugby, there's no like Olympics this year, there'll be very little live sport for people to, the Premier League won't have started back either, so people can take their holidays there with their families and be content, they won't be missing much sport.
But there will be GA, there'll be loads of club GA going on, and RTE did it during the pandemic, and TG Carter did it brilliantly as well. It's just a matter of promoting those games a bit more, showing those games, when those games are on TV, like loads of people have watched them. Have you seen the viewing figures?
Have they ever produced viewing figures for them? Have RT ever produced viewing figures? I haven't seen them.
There's a project for Brainy Beat next Tuesday. No.
The point is the club is hugely important, but it's literally of local interest though, and it's grand watching a game from Wexford or from Galway or anywhere else. But if you're from that county or indeed from the club. But it's the high profile events that are the real marketing that sell the organisation and sell the sports and sell the players, that we want to see the top players as often and as long as we can, and we're not getting that.
Just lastly on that, Will, if it's a matter of finding extra weeks for a championship and prolonging it out a bit more, then they need to look at, particularly with the Hurling League, they need to look at taking a couple of weeks off the league. And if it's a matter of starting the championship a bit earlier and even progressing it a bit earlier, and it's, you know, the inter-county season is February to the middle of August. Well, then so be it. And you still have extended it a small bit. You've allowed it time to breed. The club players still know exactly when they're featuring as well. Now, I know we didn't... I'll leave it at that because we didn't expect to get in a club versus county or anything like that today, but that's the way it goes. When you have Brainy on, you know there's going to be a row.
I was going to say, I've lost count of the time someone said last thing, and then we've gone in for again. But we'll go back to the football weekend, Martin. Donegal Armagh was the other big game, another Division 1 clash. And I think if people had watched Armagh play Dublin in the first round of the league and how they played and how they went about their business and watched yesterday, they would have been very disappointed with what was served up. You know, I don't know how surprised you'd be with Armagh, because Kieran McGeaney's Ulster Championship record is very, very poor. But still, considering the league they had and some of the victories they achieved, very disappointing way for them to exit their Ulster Championship.
Well, I mean, Dick Clarkin has a very interesting column in the Indo today where it's big men when it doesn't count. Armagh showed no stomach for the fight in Ballybofey. And you'd have to say that you can't argue with that. I mean, they let it pass them by. And it's very disappointing for Armagh. And after all they were seen perhaps as potential Ulster winners or perhaps Ulster finalists, It didn't go for them. They didn't perform at all. Very, very disappointing. And for Donegal, I suppose Donegal haven't performed for the last number of years, and it was very important for them. But certainly to Armagh, what you might call the first real big disappointment of the championship, and they have a lot to work on. They just weren't good enough and didn't stand up when they needed to stand up. And it's a long way back farther. I'm not saying that one defeat doesn't destroy your season or anything like that, but there were so many negatives for them to take out of it that there'll be a lot of work to do to turn those into positives before the qualifiers.
Looks like as well, just with this appeals process, a lot of the time it seems to take more energy out of the appealing team or the appealing players. And thinking back to the time Dermot Connolly got off, was it for an All-Ireland semi-final at the 11th hour? It seems to take an awful lot of energy out of them. Declan Bonner said it was a bit of an absolute farce of a system. They obviously didn't appeal Neil McGee's and Aura McFadden Ferry's suspensions, and they probably created a bit of a siege mentality, I'd say, as a result of that. And yet again, it's proved just how hard to beat, how hard they are to beat up in Ballybofey. Martin said there, and he's right to say, Donegal have probably stuttered and underperformed and not maybe lived up to the expectations for them in recent years. But that was a big performance from them and a bit of a statement. And Ulster kind of opens up nicely for them now. I know they're coming up against the 2020 champions next, Cavan, but they would be expected to get over that. And who knows, maybe they'll finally deliver on that potential that we think they have. But very disappointing from an Armagh point of view. Had a great goal chance just after half time. Really kind of a bewildering decision. I don't know, did the referee make the easy choice there? Definitely didn't look like the ball was fouled. But it went from, you know, being a metre from the goal line, and potentially, and it did end up over the line to being a free out, and then Armagh didn't score for about 15 minutes thereafter, and the game was essentially over. But definitely, you'd have to say Donegal full value for it, and they're in a good spot now to make a good run at Ulster again.
Yeah, Martin, and Michael Murphy put in a really good performance as well. Like, still going, I think it was mentioned yesterday, young player of the year in 2009, 13 years later, still leading Le Mans. And I know there's always been a debate about where the best place to play him is, but he was very influential yesterday.
He was. I mean, he's a phenomenal, really, as a player, has been phenomenal ever since he came aboard in 2009. And I always remember many years ago, people talked about Peter Canavan. There were bits of him left lying around the fields of Ulster for many years before Tyrone made the breakthrough. He was a marked man, and he used to come in for a lot of, shall we say, special treatment. But Murphy has been in that category for so long now. I mean, everybody sets out to nullify him, and he takes the hits, the belts, gets on with it. He really is a fantastic player. Great attitude, because as I say, he's targeted left, right, and centre, always has been. But he's well able for the big man, and but they do need him sailing, and that's the point. Perhaps others need to be stepping up a little bit more now, because he can't keep dominating to the degree that he's been over the years. But my God, what a contribution he's made to Donegal and indeed to football.
Yeah, and as Michael mentions, they play Cavan next in the semi-final, a revenge mission after their surprise defeat to them in 2020. And Michael, just to finish up on the football, we'll look at the Leinster Championship. Awfully very disappointing defeat to Wexford. Ben Brosnan rolling back the years with 1-5, and they'll play Dublin now next weekend in Wexford Park on a Saturday evening. But, you know, given Offaly started the year in Division 2, and now they're going to be finishing in the Tailteann Cup after an early defeat in the Championship, it's been a very disappointing 2022.
Yeah, Offaly were a point away from staying up in Division 2. And then you look at Wexford, they were, you know, third from bottom in Division 4. They would have definitely, when they saw Niall McNamee was out and even his cousin Rory was missing for this game yesterday, they would have really, really fancied their chances. And in fairness to Ben Brosnan, he's been around since 2008. He's 34. I know he was plagued with hamstring injuries last year. He ended up missing the Dublin game as a result of that. He'll love getting another crack at them. But that was a massive result for Wexford yesterday. Offaly were, I think, 4 or 5 up in the early stages of the second half. And Wexford just turned the screw completely. And it was Brosnan's goal in around the 53rd or 54th minute, really, that helped them kick on. And they were full value, you'd have to say, full value for the win. And considering Brian Malone stepped away and Doughty Water stepped away, you probably would have thought they would have been under pressure. But a good sign for the youth that's coming through there. And, you know, they were far from blown away against Dublin last year in Leinster. So they'll fancy their chances, but they'll hope to be competitive again. One thing I will say about the Offaly Wexford game, the Wicklow Leash game as well, and even to a lesser extent the Loud Carlo game. Like, I think if the Tailteann Cup gets, you know, the promotion and publicity it deserves, look at, like, Wexford went into that game yesterday, albeit they were massive underdogs, thinking that they had a great chance, pulled off a big win. Wicklow, the same thing, against the odds. You throw the 16 teams down on paper, 16 or more teams in the Tailteann Cup, and you're just thinking, they all think they have a realistic chance of winning silverware. They all really think they have a realistic chance of beating the team that they're coming up against on a given week. And, you know, it's a hugely exciting championship if it's given the respect it deserves from all quarters. That's headquarters, and that's all the inter-county teams and inter-county players involved. You just hope that there's not too many fellas, you know, slipping off to America in that, and that it's given the respect it deserves, because teams coming up against teams of similar standard, they all feel they have a realistic chance of winning championship games and winning silverware. And really, that's, you know, that's what it's all about.
It's now time to turn our attention towards Hurling on the Throne podcast, and we're delighted to welcome John Milan to the show with us. John, we'll start with that Limerick-Waterford game on Saturday night in the Gaelic grounds. You know, certainly a more competitive championship encounter than they've had in the last couple of years. You know, how are you feeling about Waterford's All-Ireland chances today versus before the ball was thrown in on Saturday?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose, I think myself and Jeremy, particularly after the Cork game, we had an awful lot of egg on our face, you know, but yeah, look, Limerick, over the course of the last 2 weeks, have been extremely impressive. You know, you take into account the weekend, they were missing Kyle Hayes. You know, Keane Lynch had to go off injured. But look, as I touched on last Saturday, Will, I don't think Saturday night was the night to be beating Limerick. I thought we'd struggle to get a result up there. You know, because we have a fairly bad record up in the Gaelic grounds. It's a difficult venue to go to. The pitch dimensions as well, I don't think possibly suit Waterford either, you know, going off of even, you know, our own pitch dimensions down in Welsh Park. You know, and I think, you know, from a Waterford point of view, I think, you know, we cut the margin deficit from 11 down to 3 now. Granted, you know, Limerick were well ahead. You know, they were 6 or 7 points ahead. And, you know, all the talk out there was that the 2 goals took the gloss off of Limerick's margin of victory. But look, I think Waterford have goals in their locker. And I'd be encouraged by how Waterford finished the game in regards, you know, they were 6 or 7 points down. The easiest thing from a Waterford point of view would have been to throw in the towel. On top of that, I don't think we can underestimate, you know, going to the Gaelic grounds in such a hostilic atmosphere. You know, vast majority of the support up there were Limerick, and for me, Will, I think that's worth 3 or 4 points to the home side before you even take to the field, and it can have an effect on refereeing decisions as well. So, yeah, look, for me, I think Waterford, I think we didn't play probably up to the standards of what we've seen the last couple of weeks. And look, from my point of view, I was quite pleased of you know, they went and they took on, you know, Limerick physically. And look, possibly it's a result that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, might be no harm, because, you know, even fellas like myself, an awful lot of people down here, but we're probably getting a bit excited. But it kind of dials down the rhetoric now going forward. It dampens the hype. And yeah, I think for Waterford, I don't think, you know, Saturday night was going to be the be all or end all in beating Limerick. You know, they came up short. They lost by 3 points. Granted, Limerick were down an awful lot of personnel. But, you know, on the flip side of that, Waterford didn't start Jamie Barron. And I think they took the right decision in not starting Jamie Barron. I said it a couple of weeks ago, getting Jamie Barron right for the Cork and Clare game was crucial. And we can't underestimate either that, you know, Irla Daly going off. You know, he was doing very well on Galan, and, you know, you kind of had to reshuffle your pack then. So, yeah, ultimately, from a Waterford point of view, it was always going to come down to these 2 games against Cork and Clare. And ultimately now, I think Cork, that's our All-Ireland now in 2 weeks' time. We beat Cork, we're in pole position to get into the top 3. And finishing in the top 3, you know, finishing third mightn't be bad, you know, might be a bad place to finish in this Munster campaign. You know, you might avoid playing Limerick again in a Munster final. So, yeah, look, for me, I think what we've seen from Limerick is if Limerick get all their players back onto the pitch, they're going to be extremely difficult to beat. You know, let's call a spade a spade. But look, I think Waterford, if they can finish in the top 3, get back into Croke Park, yeah, I still believe that they are good enough to go and challenge and possibly win the All-Ireland. Now, look, everything is going to have to go their way. And look, a lot will depend on how Limerick's injuries clear up, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Martin, what's your kind of assessment of where things are at now after Saturday night's result? There was obviously so much focus on whether Waterford can, you know, put down a statement of intent and maybe get one over on Limerick with an eye on later on in the summer. Now that didn't come to pass, you know, how are you viewing things?
It didn't, and it's all about getting into the top 3. But I was disagree with John a little bit, and I saw what he wrote on Saturday that he was implying really that it didn't matter, perhaps, this wasn't the time to beat Limerick. There's always now the next game is the time to beat anybody, as far as I'm concerned. And if Waterford were to beat them last Saturday, get them again in the Munster final, do it again, doing the All-Ireland. I mean, that was Kilkenny's way, modus operandi all their way. They'll try to do you in the Walsh Cup. They'll kill you for a point on a snowy day in Parnell Park. And I think it was a chance to put down the famous marker. They had a good shot at it and it didn't quite come up. So it's not by any means catastrophic or anything like that. But John is talking there now about, you know, perhaps finishing third. I think they still need to come back, have another go at Limerick. I mean, keep at them. The more often you play them, the better chance you have of beating them. It's as simple as that. If you're not playing them, you can't beat them. So I think they should be, and they will be trying to have a right go and get back into the Munster final. And assuming, of course, that Limerick are there, you just never know. But Yeah, I suppose it's still about the top three or getting into that top three. Everybody now, it's about the All-Ireland. The provincial titles don't really matter a whole lot. That's a fact. So it's about the All-Ireland. It didn't do Waterford any damage, I think, which was the main thing. They weren't wiped off the pitch or anything like that. So they're fine with that. I think they'll be okay. It's just a bit disappointing, perhaps, that they didn't, after such a good start, that they didn't build on that. But they're fine, and the season will roll on for them. And I would think certainly they still want to perhaps have another go at Limerick in the later on the Munster campaign. Not so much to win the title, but to have another go off them and have a shot.
But man, we got to be realistic here. You're like, you know, are you going to beat Limerick twice in the one?
But you've got to beat them once, John. I mean, if you can beat them once, you can beat them twice. I mean, I don't agree with you. I think that, yes, you can. I mean, of course it's possible. They can't do it now because they could still beat them twice, by the way. They might have two more goals at them. I thought they had a go at it. I mean, I'm not being critical of Waterford, but I would have thought, I would disagree with you on that, but I thought it was that it did matter a fair bit if they had beaten Limerick, I think they would be in a much better position this morning. They would have put doubts in Limerick. And I know you talked about the hype in Waterford, and there is, and there's no doubt about that, but there's nothing wrong with that either, as you well know, if it's controlled, and I'm sure it would be.
Yeah, Michael, like, what's your, you know, we have kind of two competing views there. Like, how are you viewing things today?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Will. Like, the last two times they'd met, there was an 11-point deficit. I didn't get to see the game live on Saturday night, and you're looking at it and you're saying 221 to 30. They're after closing the gap to three. Three is probably not realistic. I'd say 7 or 8 is probably a bit more realistic. I think Waterford will have learned an awful lot. Even, you know, the idea of moving Conor Prunty out to pick up Garrod Hegarty, I think it's good to see from Liam Cattle's point of view that he's willing to try different things. I know John wrote in his column on Saturday that Jamie Barron could play in the forwards potentially against Waterford. That might happen maybe later on in the year. I think they would have learned an awful lot. I think from a Limerick point of view, to me, this is one of their best wins in maybe 3 or 4 years with all the adversity that was thrown at them. Starting a big game without Kyle Hayes, Seamus Flanagan, Peter Casey, all-stars. Your two-time hurler of the year goes off the pitch. You're thinking the deck is maybe stacked against them. But when push came to shove, you know, from probably the 40th to the 60th minute, they just totally ground down Waterford. You'd have to say, They created, I think, 29 scoring chances in the second half. Waterford created 38 overall. Waterford really struggled for scores, aside maybe from those two goals. I'm not saying that the goals camouflaged it or made it look like they were closer to them than they actually were. But as regards, you know, chances created in the second half, Limerick were miles clear. And they were just so on their game. And I think, you know, internally, they would have been very disappointed with some of their performances in the Gaelic grounds in the league. And I think they had a bit of a point to prove the other day. And they definitely proved it on home soil. It was a masterful performance. I do agree with what Martin says as well. The more cracks you get off Limerick, I don't think there was any psychological damage done to Waterford the other day. They had psychological damage from the previous two times they met, maybe. But the gap is closing. It's probably not closing maybe as quick as Waterford people would like. But it's funny, we're talking about, you know, potentially Waterford meeting them maybe another two times. As John says there, they do have they have important business to take care of. They need to get a couple of results. They need to make sure they get out of Munster first and foremost. But I don't think it will have had any psychological damage to them. And I think they'll take it in their stride. And I do fancy them to get out of Munster. And I fancy them to get to a Munster final again. From their point of view, at least close the gap a little bit further to Limerick again. But I do think we learned a lot the other night. We learned that Waterford are getting closer, but we also learned that, like, Limerick are not going away. And no matter what you throw at them, they seem to be able to find an answer. And they did that spectacularly the other night, you'd have to say.
And as impressive as Limerick have been, they'll be really looking at those injuries to Keane Lynch and Kyle Hayes, soft tissue hamstring injuries that in a round robin can, you know, really put guys out for a couple of weeks in some key games. But so they've done a lot of the hard work with two wins already. And John Munster, I suppose at the start we were kind of looking at maybe a Limerick Waterford final as maybe the likely outcome. But with Clare's performance yesterday against Tipperary, I think there's certainly a new wrinkle. A lot of people, maybe Clare were almost a forgotten team in many ways. And like, how impressed were you with how they went about their business in Thurles yesterday?
I couldn't get over even the match odds before the match and how they were so big rank outsiders to go and beat Tipperary. I mean, you gotta go back 12 months ago. They came to Turles, and you know, Waterford were on everybody's lips after the league, and they came and put in a great performance against Waterford and turned Waterford over. And it wasn't so long ago that, I think it was nearly last year, 2 years ago, people were saying that, you know, Clare Hurling was in disarray, and you know, what direction were they going? And you got to give great credit to Brian Lone, and you know, their under-20s were extremely unlucky in both their fixtures, possibly should have won both fixtures. Their minors had a great result last week against my own county, Waterford. St. Flannan's winning the Hardy Cup. And then, you know, yesterday they just turned up and they gave, you know, a complete performance. They were brilliant. You know, John Conlon at centre-back, Rory Hayes a cornerback. There's a cornerback there that can go and take on any Tally's man now, where you can pinpoint him. You know, they have a solid half-back line, Dermot Ryan, Conlon, and McInerney seems to be coming back to himself. And then up top, I mean, you know, they weren't over-reliant on Kelly. I mean, before Kelly, you'd be saying, look, he's a one-man show. But, you know, it's encouraging from Clare that, you know, Tony Kelly, by his standards now, probably, I wouldn't say had an off day, but probably had a relatively quiet day. Now, he still came up with some big scores. But you look at the two guys that came back, you know, O'Donnell and Peter Duggan. I mean, they're two all-stars, and you know, they were laid off for so long, and to see the performances that they put in yesterday, the shift that they put in, and you think of India that young Shane Meehan didn't play yesterday, Rogers, and if they can get Aidan McCarty back, we've seen, you know, what type of a player he is, you know, last year or two. If they can get him back, you know, yeah, Clare are going in the right direction, and yeah, I think they could have a say, and look, they have Limerick in the Gaelic grounds, and I think the fixtures, you know, are kind of going their way as well. Like, you know, they play Cork next week. You know, if Limerick are qualified by the time they go to the Gaelic grounds or go to Ennis, will they rest a couple of players with all the injuries that they have? So you'd be thinking that, you know, that's a winnable game. You know, Waterford then travel to Ennis. And look, from my own point of view, Waterford, we can't even be thinking about trilogies or playing Limerick in a Munster final rematch. Our focus now is both Cork and Clare. And that's the way Cork and Clare are going to look at it too, because Cork, albeit if they were to lose to Clare, they still have a chance, because, you know, Cork have to go to Welsh Park. And if Cork were to turn Waterford over in Welsh Park, they've Tipperary in the last game, and Tipperary could be gone out of the championship. So Tipperary might end up trying out a few players. So yeah, it's all to play for. And I think Clare, yeah, they're right in the mix. And you're talking about Waterford Limerick Munster final. I don't think Clare now will, you know, will, I don't think Clare will write that script. I think they'll be right in the mix, and they'll see this as a great opportunity of getting to a Munster final and kicking on. And you know, as we touched on the personnel there, they've every opportunity again to a Munster final and possibly get into an All-Ireland semi-final.
Martin, it sets that Clare Cork game up really nicely for next weekend. And of course, that'll be on in Turles. It would have been originally on in Porky Cave, but due to Ed Sheeran, that's been moved to Turles. So a significant, I know Cork like playing in Turles, but at the same time, you know, they've lost home advantage and they're going against a team in form. They themselves obviously having been beaten pretty comprehensively by Limerick. So that's a very interesting game as well.
It is, and you know, a home advantage, if it counts for anything, then they're losing out on this, and there are other reasons, of course, we know for that. They really have to perform better than they did against Limerick. I mean, I thought they were absolutely terrible. I thought I just couldn't get over some of the stuff that I saw that against Cork. Like, Cork were always what you might call an instinctive team, and who played, you know, in many ways they had that touch, and their touch was always very good, and they played with it. But this business of, as they did for the, was with the second goal, when they get possession out in the left back position and they bring it into the centre, and they go to two back passes and they lose the ball, it's turned over, gone to Gillan, goal. And you say, what the hell is going on? You know, you don't score at that end of the field. I know that might sound old-fashioned. Cork did not give themselves a chance, a real chance against Limerick, as they should have with the style that they're playing. And they allowed Kyle Hayes to walk through virtually from the sideline. They've got to just go back to... They've got to be a bit more instinctive in what they do. And if they don't do that, Clare certainly will beat them. There's no doubt about that. But I think perhaps there will be a kickback in them, and there has to be, because after that Limerick performance, it was terrible on and off the pitch, I felt.
Michael, what about Tipperary? Obviously, that even though they didn't beat Waterford in the first round, people were very impressed with how they performed. I think, you know, in the first half, I think all their forwards had scored from play, whereas I think they only got 3 points from play from their forwards against Clare, and Clare were 13 points clear at the break in Thurles. It was a pretty surprising turn of events, considering how they went in the first week.
Yeah, a very strange. I know Eddie Brennan, in his column today, was talking about how your home venue should be a fortress, and like, it was anything but yesterday. It was just mad. It was mad looking at some things that happened in that game. Shane O'Donnell played a lovely pass through to John Conlon, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, it was like the Red Sea in front of him, just space, acres of space, and a 3-on-2. And even Brian Hogan made two, you know, decent saves for the two goal chances, and there was hardly a Tipperary defender in sight. And Ian Galvin was able to take a touch, steady himself, put the ball to the net. Peter Duggan was able to bat the ball to the net unopposed. Just really, really strange. I know Eddie said it was kind of a, he was wondering about whether there was a bit of an identity crisis in Tipperary. You'd have to say, just harping back to something Martin said there, there definitely didn't seem to be much instinct with them. I'll put it to you that way. They seemed to be a bit confused about what they're supposed to be doing. But there should be no confusion about, you know, where your half-back line is and the cover that they should be providing to their full-back line. So I thought that was very, very strange. There's probably two sides of it. Probably, a really good team performance from Clare, where everybody fronted up, and then you have, you know, a Tipperary performance. You'd probably call it a non-performance, really. Apart from Ger Brown's goal in the second half, maybe you thought might light a bit of a fuse into them, but they just never really got going. And it's a difficult position for Colin Bonner to be in. Obviously, Paddy Maher was forced to retire. Brendan Maher retired. John Bubbles O'Dwyer is you know, not fit with injury at the moment. Seamus Callanan's not fit. Suppose if you take that type of personnel out of any squad, you're probably going to struggle. But he's in a really, really difficult spot at the moment, and they're playing Limerick next time out. So it's not going to get any easier for them at all. Far from it. And as the lad said there, you know, it looks like Tipperary's Munster Championship will be done and dusted after that Limerick game, and they'll have what will be a dead rubber potentially for them against Cork in the last round of the Munster round robin. And it looks like their bags are going to be packed pretty early in this campaign. And there was a good bit of optimism after the Waterford game. Maybe some of it was false optimism, and Waterford just underperformed that day, and it was a bit of a league final hangover. But it doesn't look like things are going to get any easier for Tip at all at this stage.
Yeah, it shows you just how vital it is to take your opportunities in a round-robin format when they come, because you mightn't get another one. And John, I know, I suppose Munster has been, you know, kind of the talking point the first 2 weeks, but there was a big game in Leinster on Saturday night, Dublin getting a very good win away to Wexford. And I know you're someone who has been kind of on the Dublin train the last couple of years, you know, expecting them to maybe kick on. Well, that was a massive result in the right direction if they want to make a Leinster final.
Speaking of missed opportunities, the opportunities that Wexford missed, I think they had 18 wides, I mean, at crucial stages of the games. And I think it's a missed opportunity for Wexford. They possibly should have won the game. I think Dublin, they always kept Wexford at arm's length. They always had that four or five point cushion. And any time Wexford would come back, they'd go up the field and they'd push on and get another crucial score to keep Wexford at arm's length. But yeah, Darry Egan, when he reflects on this game, he'll be ruined to misses. You think of Conor McDonald's goal opportunity before half time. You think of the penalty opportunity missed. They had another opportunity. Rory O'Connor missed some vital frees. And yeah, they had the opportunities. But great credit to Dublin. You know, you think of a player like Donald Burke, 12 points, 4th in play, 8th in place balls. He got 13 points the last day out against Laois. And it was bodies on the line. You know, they were doing stuff near the end. And it's a great, great result for Dublin, you know, coming off the back of, you know, probably that underperformance against Laois. And it sets them up lovely now going forward. I think they've Kilkenny in 2 weeks' time against up in Parnell Park. And then they go to Galway. They go to Galway then in the last game. which will probably be a fixture that will probably be, you know, will decide which one will get to a Leinster final. But yeah, I think if you told Matty Kennedy before the game that look, they'd win by 1 point and they'd get another 2 points on the board, he would have taken the hand off you.
Well, just on that, the missed opportunities, like it's kind of some of Wexford's old problems coming home to roost again. The free taking has been an issue for a few years now, and it was an issue again on Saturday evening. They missed 5 points from frees between Lee Chin and Rory O'Connor, and for the second successive game, you know, they didn't get a goal from a penalty, and it was a brilliant save by Sean Brennan, but they didn't hit the back of the net from a penalty, which is, you just have to take that chance when it arises. And even you'd feel sorry for Conor McDonald, who was brilliant the week before, and Rory O'Connor put the ball through an Ivan Needle for them, that chance, and it was maybe just snapped at it a bit and just put it across the goals. But I know Darry Egan is still confident that they can get 6 points from their last three games. They've Laois, Westmeath, and then Kilkenny that last day. If they do get 6 points, they'll definitely get out of Leinster. But it's just the permutations are really, really fascinating. You think Dublin are in a really, really good position to qualify at the moment. I think, you know, Galway, albeit a very good result against Westmeath at the weekend, you know, a lot will depend on how they get on at the weekend against Kilkenny, which is obviously, and I'm sure it'll be teed up plenty throughout the week. The master against the pupil, with Henry coming up against Brian Cody, that's going to be fascinating. But even though Dublin looked like they have, you know, 1 foot in that top three at the moment, I think it's far from certain, and I think it's going to be fascinating over the next couple of weeks. And that last weekend in Leinster, we probably looked at it from far away, like Galway host Dublin, Kilkenny and Wexford, and then Laois and Westmeath. There's so much on the line there for be it the top three spots, the top two spots, and then the bottom two spots, and who's going to be relegated from Leinster. So there's a lot to be played for in Leinster over the next couple of weeks, particularly that last weekend.
Yeah, Martin, how are you kind of assessing Leinster at the moment? You know, obviously Limerick are runaway favourites kind of in Munster, and Leinster does seem to be more, you know, open, especially like this game this Sunday, as Michael alluded to, you know, Henry Shefflin going up against Brian Cody, Galway versus Kilkenny. It's set up to be a very exciting and dramatic game. You know, when you run your eye over Leinster, kind of, what are your thoughts?
Well, we've had six games so far, but we've really only had two games in terms of deciding who will be the top three. With respect, and there were Dublin and Wexford and Galway and Wexford. And Wexford have played two of the big boys, which is important. It's easy to forget that, where Kilkenny have yet to play any of them. So, oddly enough, Laois and Westmeath, in all probability, the only win they will get will be in the head-to-head contest. One of them will win that one. But they could still, and will have a big say, I think, in who and the three teams that come out. Because everybody else, the top four, will beat those two. I think there's no doubt about that. And then it will come down to how much they beat them by. Because as happened in 2019, when Galway lost out on scoring difference that time, it could come down to the very same thing again. And I think it was interesting, Galway, that year they beat Carlo by 6 points, and it came back to haunt them because everybody else beat Carlo by a lot more. Galway certainly went over last Saturday to put as much as they could between themselves and Westmeath and build up their scoring difference. I think there will be scoring difference issues at the end of this because it's going to be that tight. Wexford at the moment, 1 point from two games, but they've played Galway, they've played Dublin, one to come. Kilkenny haven't played any of the top three yet, so It is wide open. Wexford are by no means out of it. But as I say, it could come down in all probability into scoring difference. We'll decide probably the last place anyway in terms of how much the teams beat Laois and Westmeath by.
Yeah, well, it's only two rounds in, but already the permutations are fascinating for the next couple of weeks. Martin, John, Michael, thanks so much for joining me. That's all we have time for in the Tyrone podcast today. We'll be back later in the week with Philly McMahon's Friday Tyrone podcast as he discusses all the latest football talking points. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.